WCCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This week on Viewpoints.
There's been consistently more hurricane damage over the last 10 years than there was, for instance, in the 30 years leading up to it.
What's making hurricanes more intense and destructive? Then,
emotions are complicated. They play out in ways that we can't always predict or control, and they're messy and inconvenient.
You fell in love, got married, and thought the hard part was over. Why maintaining a healthy marriage is a lifelong journey. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
At Skechers, comfort is a technology. That's right, it doesn't just happen. You don't just make a shoe and hope it comes out comfortable. It takes research, innovations, compounds, engineering, and so many of the boring things we don't really want to get into. Because it gives us time to talk about the exciting stuff. Your comfort. You see, Skechers want you to feel so comfortable you swear you're wearing pillows on your feet. So we have features like Skechers Air Cool Memory Foam that molds to your foot and wraps it in luxury. And Skechers has fits like Relax Fit, Stretch Fit, Wide Fit, Arch Fit, and so many more. All comfort technologies that make the shoe feel like it was custom-made just for your foot. Plus, we have hands-free Skechers Slip-ins technology, and this, folks, is a game-changer. This tech allows you to just step into your shoes and put them on. You don't have to bend down and struggle. You don't even have to touch them. That's ultimate convenience and comfort. So you see, comfort is a technology. And nobody, and I mean nobody, does comfort like Skechers. The Comfort Technology Company. Find yours at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever comfortable footwear is sold.
Last month marked 20 years since Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Katrina was the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history and killed close to 1,400 people. Even today, residents are still recovering from its effects and understand that it could happen again. Scientists are also concerned as climate change is creating stronger and more destructive hurricanes.
We know that hurricanes are not necessarily becoming more frequent. That is, there aren't necessarily more hurricanes out there. But what hurricanes we do have and we are experiencing on the mainland here in the United States and indeed across the rest of the world are becoming more severe. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a few different ways that the characteristics of hurricanes are changing in response to climate change. One of the ways is very simple. It's related to sea level rise. So we know that around the world, especially along the eastern Gulf Coast of the United States, sea levels are starting to increase quite dramatically, and they've been increasing for the last 100 years. What that means is that as these hurricanes come on shore, they're bringing higher water levels with them, which can threaten infrastructure in particular coastal region.
That's Daniel Guilford, a climate scientist at the nonprofit science news organization Climate Central.
Another way that hurricane characteristics are becoming more severe is that we know that a warmer atmosphere is a wetter atmosphere. So atmosphere is becoming more moist as we increase the atmospheric temperature due to human-caused climate change. There's more moisture in the atmosphere, and that means that hurricanes can rain out more effectively. There's more water coming out of hurricanes now, and that is a real big problem because not only are we dealing with storm surge as a hurricane comes on land, but we can see intense, significant rainfall impacts due to these hurricanes.
Storm surge can cause dangerous flooding and happens when there's a quick rise in water levels during a hurricane and strong winds push the water inland. Additionally, hotter temperatures cause more evaporation, and as hurricanes move across warm oceans, they pull in extra heat and water vapor, fueling stronger, more destructive storms.
Coinciding with that, we see that there's an increase in the amount of billion-dollar disasters that we have associated with hurricanes. There's been consistently more hurricane damage over the last 10 years than there was, for instance, in the 30 years leading up to it. There's just more and more damaging associated with these storms. Part of that is related to increased vulnerability, especially there's more people living in vulnerable places now to these hurricane impacts. But part of that is also increases in hurricane destruction.
According to the last census, 94.7 million Americans live in coastline regions. This is nearly 30% of the overall U.S. population. Of that group, 60.2 million live along the Atlantic Ocean or the Gulf of Mexico, two areas that are the most vulnerable to hurricanes. As these storms have intensified, there's been some action taken to make structures stronger and more resilient. However, Jeff Slegamelch, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Columbia Climate School at Columbia University, believes there's still a long way to go.
In Florida, after Hurricane Andrew in the 1990s, a number of codes were changed, sort of recognizing the vulnerability from that. And some of it is more proactive. But so one of the first ones are building codes. How we build our homes, how we build our infrastructure, where we build it, if you're going to build it in a hurricane-prone area, if you're going to build in an area prone to storm surge, you have to have certain things in place, right? So the building codes require that by law. In a lot of other cases, we see codes maybe not being put in place, not being pushed forward, because it has this very real effect of making it more expensive in the near term, right? It costs more to build a home that will withstand a hurricane than to build one that won't. And so that creates some economic pressures that affect growth, that affect things like affordable housing. And if you're in an environment that is, on top of all that, hostile to this notion of climate change, you can get a lot of pressures against putting in those types of regulations and things like that.
Building codes vary across the country, but in hurricane-prone regions, they often require stronger materials for framing and roofing, enhanced foundation and structural requirements, and adherence to strict wind-resistance standards. And while investing in resilience is expensive, it's much cheaper to spend the money now rather than after the damage is done. Some estimates say spending $1 pre-disaster saves you $6 after, with some experts placing that number as high as $15. These measures can make a big difference, but in many places, they're no longer enough. Along coasts hit hard by sea level rise, some experts are pushing a controversial strategy called managed retreat.
There was actually a study, but it was looking really globally at the economics of either shoring up areas, making them more resilient to storms and sea level rise and all these different hazards. And the other is to say, pack it up and move it inland, right? And what that study found and what we find time and time again is that neither solution is actually economically viable. You have some areas that are so built up with so much infrastructure in the pathways, it's actually better to shore them up, build flood walls and various types of infrastructure. Others are just in such hazardous areas that it just is not economically viable to protect them. You have to move them.
Managed retreat also overlooks the human cost of leaving. For families who've lived in coastal areas for generations, being forced to move from the only place you've ever called home can be deeply traumatic.
The one thing that we lose with all of this, though, is the human side. We have areas where families have lived for generations. Some have very significant cultural ties and things like that. Those don't get caught up in those economic analyses. So there are a lot of very innovative solutions that have to do with the built environment of things that we can do if we can afford them. But there's also a lot on the social environment in terms of keeping people together, keeping communities together, staying connected with where they've lived for generations that also has a value that we don't necessarily take into account.
One notable example of managed retreat is the Isle de Jean Charles in Louisiana. The island, which was a historical homeland of a Native American tribe, was forced to relocate after years of rising sea levels and coastal erosion. After getting funding from the U.S. government, the community successfully resettled to a new isle 40 miles away. While there have only been a few instances of these domestic relocations, that number will soon grow if climate change continues to worsen.
There are areas everywhere, certainly in the U.S. along the Gulf Coast and low-lying areas of Louisiana. You have some communities that are at risk of disappearing as a result of this, and even major built-up areas like Miami and Florida are extraordinarily exposed.
So, what can we do? With climate change occurring on such a large scale, you may feel powerless when hurricanes and other natural disasters happen. And though we can't control the timing or impact of these events, there are factors that are in our control.
The short-term solution is to go to ready.gov and prepare yourself by having you and your household prepared for the worst of hurricane disasters if you are sort of in the range of where hurricanes could be. Further inland communities now should be prepared. If you live along the Eastern Gulf Coast for hurricane impacts, I think that's critical. So go to ready.gov and prepare yourself. The other thing is sort of a longer term goal, which is that we need to continue to see this as an opportunity to talk about how our climate is changing and affecting our communities. We know these storms are now more severe because of human-caused climate change. We are increasing the temperature of our atmosphere and oceans, and that's affecting these intense events and making them worse. But we need need to be having those conversations where we talk with people that we know, that we love, that we care about these impacts, so we can collectively together work towards solutions to making them less terrible for the communities that we care about.
Looking ahead, while some communities will have the money and resources to adapt, others will be left behind.
Unfortunately, what we're seeing right now is a little bit of a reversal in the U.S., where we're seeing a lot of those preparedness programs being cut or being eliminated. And so it's going to be sort of the haves and the have-nots in terms of who can afford to be resilient, who can afford to put these preparedness mechanisms and infrastructure in place. There's a saying that disasters don't discriminate. And I can tell you the data shows time and time again, they absolutely do discriminate. You can have the same disaster hit the same city and communities that are more socially isolated, more socioeconomically deprived, which correlates with a lot of times with race, with gender, all sorts of things based on historical policies have extraordinarily different experiences in their capacity to cope, their ability to marshal resources and access resources after a disaster. So we can't just look at the exposure to the hazard. We have to look at the ability to recover from that. And that's where we truly get an effective and lasting recovery.
To find out more about Daniel Guilford, Jeff Segelmilch, and all our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on X, Facebook, and Instagram. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price. This segment is sponsored by Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Coming up, we speak with a psychologist and marital expert about why marriage feels so hard sometimes when Viewpoints returns.
Behold the Colonel's giant KFC chicken sandwich, a towering extra crispy monument to flavor. Such a huge amount of juicy hand-breaded KFC chicken at a pretty tiny $3.99 price. For the Colonel's KFC chicken sandwich. I mean, $3.99 isn't even worthy of the same epic soundtrack as the KFC chicken sandwich for only $3.99. The Colonel lived, so we could chicken.
Prices and participation vary while supplies last. Taxes, tips, and fees extra.
If Old Spice Deep Sea Super Hydration Body Wash were music, what would it sound like? Start with the deep sounds of Old Spice's ocean waves and kelp. Layer on the smooth, renewing moisture. You wouldn't hear any parabens or phthalates because Old Spice Deep Sea hasn't got any. But you would hear that vitamin B3 for healthier-looking skin. So while your regular body wash sounds like this, Old Spice sounds like this. Sounds like it smells amazing.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Exciting news, ladies! Always Discreet Boutique Bladder Leak underwear are available in black and printed design. Protect yourself with style. These fit and feel just like real underwear, and they give you up to zero leaks, zero odor. Designed for all shapes and sizes, they give you the confidence to be fully yourself. Don't let bladder leaks hold you back. Buy Always Discreet Boutique Bladder Leak underwear now.
It's a part of the American dream, marriage. From a young age, people are told what qualities to look for in a spouse and fantasize about their perfect wedding day. But what happens when all of those things are in the rearview mirror? At some point, the wedding cake is gone, the honeymoon period ends, and people are left to cultivate this marriage they've long dreamed about. Experts say that's not always easy. After generations of transformation, our current expectations for what a marriage should be are higher than ever before, and that can cause problems.
We're now at a moment where the expectation, the aspiration, of intimate relationships is that they be emotionally close, that they include trust and understanding and intimacy, and they include essentially all the things that people want from close relationships. And that obviously engages people's emotions, and emotions are complicated, and they are formed in our early lives. They play out in ways that we can't always predict or control, and they're messy and inconvenient.
That's Dr. Daphne DeMarnoff, a clinical psychologist and author of the book, The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together.
The rough patch is sort of an umbrella term in a sense that I came up with to sort of talk about, in general terms, a kind of moment of life, a moment in the developmental life course of marriage and of individuals. And that moment, as I'm identifying it, is this time when people have sort of made their basic life decisions, built a life together, you know, they have the kids and the job and so forth, but they feel they're kind of hitting a certain kind of wall about, is this all I want? Is this marriage working? Is, you know, a sort of existential, who am I, what am I, what do I want? Is this enough kind of moment?
DeMarnoff says people can react to a rough patch in many ways. They may become withdrawn or apathetic. Some may even resort to abusing drugs and alcohol, while others may go on a reckless spending spree. Of course, those behaviors will likely just make the rough patch worsen. DeMarnoff says there are healthy ways to examine a relationship and work through a tough time.
The beauty of an intimate relationship is that you can depend on this person and get really important emotional needs met through them. But the risk or the danger is that you believe that if you don't feel that you're getting certain things from that person, that the problem is the marriage or the other person. And I think that marriage in general, intimate relationships in general, are hugely vulnerable to blame and projection and seeing the other person as your problem, because it's in the nature of human anxiety that when you're feeling like you're struggling and need help and you don't feel you're getting it, that you get upset with the person who you feel isn't providing it. So my main thrust in how I talk to people is that you have to be able to look within and to cultivate your own self-awareness about your own emotions and try to figure out how to know your emotions and express them skillfully.
Especially in times of great change, becoming an empty nester, changing jobs, moving cities, or even biological change, DeMarnoff says it's important for people to take stock of their own selves.
I talked to one woman who said, you know, when she went through menopause, she just sort of felt depressed and she felt bad about herself and she felt kind of like she didn't want to do anything. And she just kind of forced herself to take up some new interests. What I liked about that was she wasn't turning to her partner and acting like he was the problem. She saw that she was going through something developmental. She was going through a challenge in her own course of her own life that she realized she needed to take care of. And that is hugely helpful to relationships when people can take responsibility in a sense for their own unhappiness and dissatisfaction. Say, what do I need that I'm not getting in my life? Not you, but in my life.
In her experience, DeMarnoff says she's learned that a big issue for many couples is communication. She says couples may have arguments via text message or allow themselves to say angry, hurtful things. She says these things will always be worked out better in person and without tempers flaring.
Share your feelings, but try to lead with soft emotions because, you know, especially when people have their first children, you know, when they have children, you know, there's a statistic that suggests that marital satisfaction pretty much always goes down, at least temporarily, when people have children. And it's a real vulnerable time in terms of people feeling they need a lot from each other in terms of support and dependency, but also feeling through fatigue and stress and so forth, easily frustrated by each other. And so they can get kind of irritable and frustrated and not as positive as they might be. And so at the moments like that, which are vulnerable to that, to always try to move toward how can I express what I'm feeling on the more vulnerable end of the spectrum, like it makes me sad or it makes me lonely or it makes me scared when I don't feel like you're as dependable as I need you to be or whatever. Because people can often start developing a critical story about their spouse.
Everyone wants to have an idyllic marriage, one that just works on its own and never lets you down. DeMarnoff says that's not realistic and that, like anything else in life, to reap all of the benefits of a healthy marriage, you have to be willing to do the work.
We also live in a culture where it's like kind of admirable to work 60 hours a week, but certainly not admirable to spend any more time managing your relationship than needed. You know, I mean, we don't have a very realistic sense of what it takes, the time it takes, the effort it takes to hash out difficult emotions. And that's going to be part of the picture of marriage.
To find out more about this topic and our guest, Dr. Daphne DeMarnef, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in January 2019 and was written by producer Evan Rook. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
This is Viewpoint Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. For decades, billionaire Rupert Murdoch swayed public opinion through his vast media empire. Now at 94 years old, he's announced he's handing over the reins to his eldest son, Lachlan. The family is worth around $24 billion and oversees Fox News, the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal, and several other media entities around the world. But go back to the 1950s and this monolith was almost non-existent. It all started with a small newspaper in Australia that Rupert Murdoch inherited from his father. He quickly made a name for himself as a bold risk taker, and by the 1960s was buying up small Australian papers and tabloids, using eye-catching headlines and sensational stories to increase readership. Little by little, he expanded abroad with the purchase of UK print tabloids and then outlets in the US. Each move built on the last, creating a cross-continental network that gave him unmatched political influence and financial leverage. Today, as many media companies struggle to stay afloat, Fox Corporation has been able to set itself apart and stay profitable. In the last fiscal year, it reported a record high revenue of more than $16 billion. So what's next under this new leadership? Print tabloids, which were the core of the company, now losing money. Growth is mainly coming from sports broadcasting, subscriptions, and streaming. Analysts expect the new CEO, Lachlan Murdoch, to focus on those areas and cut back on weaker outlets. Politically, though, little is expected to change at Fox News or the New York Post. Only time will tell if Lachlan has the vision and leadership to ensure the long-term stability of this massive media network. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. 21 Pilots released their first major label album in 2013, called Vessel. Immediately, the band made a name for themselves with a signature blend of electropop, hip-hop, and indie rock. Their influences include Linkin Park, Death Cab for Cutie, and My Chemical Romance, but also 311 and Modest Yahoo. 21 Pilots have never been afraid to mix up their genres and create a sound that is very specifically theirs. After hitting a commercial peak and winning a Grammy with the 2015 album Blurry Face that featured the hits Stressed Out and Ride, the band has mostly shied away from chasing chart positions and instead doubled and tripled down on their idiosyncratic, drum-heavy, spoken-word rock-rap fusion. Their latest album is called Breach, and it finds them at the top of their game, making music that could only be theirs. The first song, City Walls, wraps up a 10-year narrative arc that has littered their music with an allegory for anxiety and depression by way of a protagonist named Clancy, locked away in a city called Dima with a group of fellow rebels. The song works both as an achievement of storytelling for those interested in the band's lore, and as a genre-hopping extravaganza for listeners who know nothing about the long-running arc. Perhaps the best song on the album is Drum Show, a new metal-adjacent showcase for drummer Josh Dunn that features a signature primal scream from frontman Tyler Joseph and a rip-roaring chorus that will please any emo music-loving millennial. I've been this way. I want to change, Dunn and Joseph both sing on the track. Another song, Downstairs, finally sees the band finish a 14-year-old demo that naturally sounds similar to the Vessel and Blurry Face era songs of the 2010s. A personal favorite of mine, One Way, is a breezy bit of ethereal music making that's perfect for driving down a highway with the windows down. For years now, 21 Pilots has maintained a small but mighty group of dedicated listeners by making their own brand of music. Their new album, Breach, sounds like a band looking back on a decade and a half of music and rejoicing in the many ways they found to give voice to their particular brand of anxious millennial emo rock rap angst. With their years-long narrative completed and old demos polished up and released, what comes next for the duo from Columbus, Ohio remains an open question. But Breach is an unmitigated success. I'm Evan Rook.
When you bundle renters and auto with Progressive, you can save while protecting your most valuable possessions, like your really expensive limited edition sneakers and your new suit for your cousin's wedding. Except you never actually bought the suit because you can't stop buying sneakers. So you show up to the wedding looking like you're going grocery shopping. But hey, at least your sneakers will look good in the pictures. Until you're cropped out of every last one of them. So go ahead and get Progressive, so you can save while protecting the things that matter to you. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
Febreze.
It's a classic odor tale. You fried fish for dinner, cleaned up, but the smell is still in the house. And the neighbors are coming over for game night. They're on their way. And then you spray Febreze Air Mist. Febreze Air starts working instantly to fight even your toughest odors, so you go from fish to fresh like that. Now all you have to worry about is Pam cheating at charades.
Breathe happy Febreze, la 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 la.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
I'm Chad Holmes, joining myself and former Wausau West High School head football coach Jason Foster every Wednesday night from 6 until 8 p.m. for the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Each week, we will review and preview the high school football action around Central Wisconsin, plus special guests. Each week, we will talk to an area head football coach about their team and also bring on a student athlete to talk about their athletics and off the field as well. The Big High School Sports Show, each and every Wednesday night from 6 until 8 p.m. on Central Wisconsin's radio home for high school sports, 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. And don't forget, you can catch a podcast of every week's show at WXCO.fm, also on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you passionate about local high school sports? So are we. WXCO 98.9 FM is proud to be the only station in Wausau bringing you live, play-by-play coverage of high school sports, game after game, season after season. But we can't do it alone. We are currently seeking local sponsors and community partners who believe in the power of sports to bring people together, inspire youth, and energize our hometown pride. Promote your business, support our local athletes, be heard by thousands of loyal local listeners. If your business is interested in supporting live sports broadcasts while gaining valuable exposure, now is the perfect time to become a WXCO sports sponsor. Message us on our Facebook page or call or text our sales rep, Aaliyah, at 608-573-1597. That's 608-573-1597. Let's keep Wausau High School sports on the air together.
This week on Viewpoints.
My 9-year-old, you know, she's like very expressive child, and she was very expressive in her grief, sobbing on the floor, like very physically exhaustive.
Whether you're 9 or 90, grief is a complicated emotion that we all feel at some point. Then,
for every meal, a food bank like the Food Depository provides, SNAP provides the equivalent of 9 meals.
In part 2 of our series, we look at the solutions and safety nets that help put food on the table for millions of Americans. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Grief isn't always loud. In children and teens, it can look like slipping grades or sudden bursts of anger or hyperactivity. Using national data from 2023, in the U.S., about 1 in 12 children will experience the death of a parent or sibling before they turn 18. In this situation, one of the big challenges that caregivers run into is finding the right kind of help that doesn't make the situation worse.
I think there's this appropriately self-focused attitude with children that is appropriate developmentally, but when it comes to grief, then it's their fault. And they'll find a way how that death was their fault, and they can really internalize that if it's not processed.
That's Natasha Daniels, a child therapist who specializes in treating grief, anxiety, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. A CDC study published last year found that nearly half of children in America with a diagnosed mental or behavioral disorder didn't get the care they needed. Most often, this is because of long wait lists to be seen, high medical costs, or not having access to the right kind of provider nearby. As a therapist, Daniels is familiar with these barriers to care and also draws from her own personal experience navigating grief and seeking help for her children.
My husband was a healthy 42-year-old. He got injured at work and had to have Achilles tendon surgery, very minor outpatient, and he was just recovering at home a few days later and went to bed and never woke up and died of a blood clot, we found out later. So I, at the time, this was about 3 years ago at this point, and my kids were 9, 11, and 18. So to have that sudden death, death is hard no matter what, but I think the suddenness of not having the ability to process a loss or see it coming was even harder to handle. My 9-year-old, she's not 9 now, she's 12, but you know, she's like very expressive. She is a very expressive child, and she was very expressive in her grief, you know, sobbing on the floor, like very physically exhaustive for my grief, you know, that she was very like outward. My son, very much aligned with his personality, was everything was fine. There's not a problem. He wasn't an issue. He was hyperactive, which he normally isn't. And so I was kind of like, what is going on with him? But I think he didn't know what to do with all this energy, all this like the sadness in the house.
On the other hand, her eldest daughter, who was about to turn 18, reacted much differently. Instead of slowing down, she threw herself into overdrive mode and stayed busy cooking meals, cleaning, and trying to hold herself together.
I had to really put her back in line and say, you're still a teenager, go out with your friends, you're going to college, like, this is not your burden, let's process this, you've had a loss too, let's talk about this.
Daniels could see the weight that her daughter was carrying. Her training as a therapist gave her tools to step in, but most parents or guardians don't have that kind of background. For families who feel lost, she recommends starting with the basics. Reach out to local grief support groups. Look into therapists who work with children or teens. And keep your child's school in the loop.
I do feel like giving your kids an opportunity to say, like, these are all the tools and resources we have for you, and then honoring what resonates with them. And so I was very fortunate to find Billy's Place, which is a grief support group in Phoenix, Arizona, that deals with like immediate loss, like a parent or a sibling. And I said to my kids, just try it 3 times. And actually Billy's Place was like that too. They're like, just give it, you know, we ask that you try 3 times. And I appreciate that because I would do that in my therapy too. I'd say, hey, I know you don't want to come to therapy, but give me, you know, 3 sessions. And if you still feel that way, I'll 100% honor that. And so 2 out of my 3 kids decided that the support groups weren't for them. And my youngest, she was there for like over a year.
And grief rarely follows a linear path. For some, the effects bubble up right away. For others, they might not appear until months or even years later. Age, personality, and developmental stage all factor into how this reactive emotion shows up.
With kids, they hit a different developmental stage, or they have like now their brain is firing at a different level and they have a new awareness, or they have a memory that at this stage of life, they can reflect differently on it, or something triggers them and they process that grief all over again. And so sometimes when they're little, they don't process grief until they're, you know, 5 years later, when they can really like experience that loss.
For Daniels, her grief wasn't just emotional, but it showed up in her body through chest tightness, sleepless nights, bone-deep exhaustion, and a constant brain fog. Even years later, this ache hasn't disappeared. Experts warn that when grief is left unacknowledged, the costs can be steep. The American Psychiatric Association reports that about 1 in 10 bereaved people develop prolonged grief disorder, a condition linked to higher risk of suicide, substance abuse, and physical illness. For children, those dangers are compounded. Unresolved grief can derail academic performance, development, and change how they view themselves and their future. It's also worth remembering that grief isn't always about death. Kids and teens can also mourn changes to their own life.
A lot of times we want to swoop in and fix it. You know, we want to make it better. And really the biggest gift we can give our kids is validation that it hurts and that there is a time for grieving, you know, grieving a friendship, grieving a new teacher and an old teacher leaving, or grieving the change that sometimes I think it's just our intuition to go in there and cheerlead and be like, but look at this other thing that's happening. It's going to be so great. And it is helpful to sit in the discomfort with your child and say, I'm sorry, I know this is hard and I know it is sad. And how can we honor this? Can we write a letter to the teacher? Or can we write a letter to your friend that left? Or is there an action that we can do that can be somewhat healing?
To learn more about this topic, links to additional resources, and our guest, Natasha Daniels, head to viewpointsradio.org. This story was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, food insecurity isn't just about hunger. It's about the systems and resources that keep millions afloat when Viewpoints returns.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you get coverage options based on how much you want to pay for car insurance. And then you decide how to spend the rest of your money, because you're in charge. Today, you're going to pay down your credit card bill. But you decide when you'll pay it.
Before the due date, so those interest charges don't get you.
But you decide if you pay it in full.
But you definitely should, because again, interest charges.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, we'll help you find coverage at a fair price. And then you're in charge. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That's the sound of James adding long-lasting Gain scent boosters to his laundry this morning. Several hours later, James sniffs the irresistible scent of Gain on his shirt. Gain. Several hours later, James has even caught the attention of his mother-in-law, and she never gives him attention.
Ooh, you smell amazing, James.
Oh, thanks, Mom. I love you, too.
I never said that.
Add Gain scent boosters to your laundry. Add joy to your day.
Last week, we heard from two sources about what it feels like to live with food insecurity and its effect on daily life. This week, we shift our focus to two organizations that are helping people put food on their table. As prices for everything remain high, the need has grown. A family of four with two parents and two children that have an income of about $32,000 a year fall below the poverty level. According to the latest U.S. Census, about 13% of households, or 17 million families nationwide, meet this criteria and get government assistance. This can mean food credits, discounted health insurance, housing subsidies, and other resources. But there's another, much larger group who earn just above the poverty level and are also chronically struggling to get by. United for Alice, a national research initiative, defines this population as the working poor. They're employed and often holding down multiple jobs, but what they make doesn't stretch far enough to cover rent, healthcare, food, and other basic living costs. By Alice's measure, 42% of U.S. households today fall into this class.
Alice is someone that we all know, but perhaps not by name. And Alice is an acronym: asset limited, income constrained, employed. So if we start just thinking about the workers that we know that we rely on a daily basis, childcare workers, home health aides, delivery drivers, bank tellers, security guards, folks that we need to keep our economy running smoothly, yet struggle to support their own families.
That's Stephanie Hoops, the national director of United for Alice. Hoops gets into how the current system goes against working people who earn just above the federal poverty level.
They're still struggling, but they're not eligible for things like SNAP and TANF and some of the most common government programs. So as a result, they are limited to basically nonprofit programs that don't have income requirements. And probably the most common of those are food banks and food pantries.
To provide some context, she breaks down how the government calculated the federal poverty level and who gets these benefits when the system was created back in the 1960s.
At the time, there was a consensus that food should be a third of your budget. So they calculated what it costs to feed a family of four and multiplied it by three. And literally, that number has been ticked up by the Consumer Price Index ever since. And it's the same number across the country, so it doesn't reflect the variation, you know, the difference in cost of living from Manhattan to Mississippi, from Indiana to Texas. And so that's out of kilter, but also it hasn't adjusted to what you really need to live and work in the modern economy.
This often includes a working phone, car, and other items. These are all extra costs that weren't factored into the original calculation that was set 60 years ago. Often, these items take priority in order for people to keep working and living, so other essentials, like buying healthy, nutritious foods, get cut. On the ground, food pantries are seeing this shift in recent years as already tight budgets become even tighter.
We all know that the price of housing and groceries and just the general cost of living is elevated right now. And so having enough to put food on the table for your family is a challenge for a lot of households. So if asked to pinpoint a specific demographic that we serve, it's really impossible because so often it's anyone. A lot of people are surprised that sometimes it's their neighbors. It's somebody they don't necessarily anticipate being food insecure, but it is currently impacting 1 in 5 households in the Chicago metro area that experience food insecurity. And when we talk about households with children, that number goes down to 1 in 4.
That's Cameron Mattson, the communications manager at the Greater Chicago Food Depository. The organization supplies food for food banks, soup kitchens, shelters, and other programs across the Chicagoland area. They also have a team that helps people in need apply for resources they qualify for, like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. And this need has grown. Last year, the Greater Chicago Food Depository and its partners served 2.4 million households. That's 64% more visitors than in 2021.
Of the 2.4 million households that we had in 2024, about 13% each month were households coming for the first time. And so, yeah, there's, again, I think it's just the challenges of finances that are bringing people in that haven't necessarily needed to use these resources in the past.
And behind the scenes, keeping shelves stocked to meet this demand is another challenge. In 2024, Mattson says the depository purchased almost 40% of the food it provided to its network. This was possible through supporter donations. The second largest funding source was from the government.
Another 28% of our food came from the federal government via the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And then the remaining 33% was donated by food distributors and manufacturers or rescued from food retailers. And so it's really this kind of three-pronged source of food that we have that provides what we need to get to our neighbors and feed this vast network.
While the Greater Chicago Food Depository serves millions each year, it's one part of a larger resource network. Mattson says food banks can't replace the support the government provides through food assistance programs like SNAP. If this federal funding is cut, much of the burden will fall back on individual states.
Historically, SNAP benefits were 100% federally funded, and Illinois, for example, could be required to pay up to $800 million annually to keep SNAP available for our neighbors. And so obviously, most states are not equipped to bridge this gap. And as much as food banks like ours want to help, we just don't have the scale for this. Because for every meal a food bank, like the Food Depository, provides, SNAP provides the equivalent of 9 meals. So the need that will be created with some of these reductions is more than we're equipped to handle.
While federal programs like SNAP are the backbone of food assistance, Hoops highlights how some states, schools, and other local nonprofits are stepping up with creative solutions to help families in need.
We're seeing some great action across the country, all different kinds of stakeholders stepping up, good action at state and local governments. May 1st in Hawaii, the state legislature approved expanding free school meal access to cover more children and specifically to help ALICE families.
These kinds of programs can ease the strain for families in the short term. But Hoops feels that the bigger long-term picture is still troubling. The fragility of today's labor market leaves millions of households on shaky ground.
Of all adults in the U.S., only 22% have the security of a full-time salary job. And that means the rest are working hourly paid or part-time or looking for work or are out of the workforce. And I think that helps sum up the precarious nature of our economy right now.
The reality is sobering. But there are resources out there and ways to get involved. So where can households turn for help if they need it? Hoops says this is the best first step.
That's to dial 211 on your phone and connect to the reference and referral service that links you to resources that are in your community. So 211 is across the country, but when you call in from a location, it goes to the resources that are in that location. And it's run by United Ways and state governments across the country. And it's also available online. So you could go to 211.org. And that's probably the fastest way to be connected to things that meet your needs and fit your situation.
Beyond seeking help, there are also ways for listeners to support the fight against food insecurity. Food banks and nonprofits depend on volunteers, donations, and advocacy to keep shelves stocked and programs running. Even small contributions of time or resources can make a difference in your community. Looking ahead, food insecurity isn't just about empty pantries and fridges. It's about the constant trade-offs that individuals and families must make to survive. Local food banks and nonprofits are doing their part, but long-term progress depends on sustained investment and smart policy at every level of our government. To learn more about United for Alice and the Greater Chicago Food Depository, as well as our guests this week, Stephanie Hoops and Cameron Mattson, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Whoa, it's you, the Capital One Bank guy.
That's what they call me.
Mind if I get a selfie?
Yeah, sure thing. Say no fees or minimums on your
Capital One
checking account.
Wow, that's a keeper. So, where are you heading?
I'm off to spread the good news that Capital One helps people keep more money in their wallet with no overdraft fees.
Oh, you're the best Capital One Bank guy.
Hey, mind if I get a selfie?
Sure.
Say, Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Febreze. It's a classic odor tale. You fried fish for dinner, cleaned up, but the smell is still in the house. And the neighbors are coming over for game night. They're on their way. And then you spray Febreze Air Mist. Febreze Air starts working instantly to fight even your toughest odors, so you go from fish to fresh like that. Now all you have to worry about is Pam cheating at charades.
Breathe happy Febreze. La 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 la.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. The country's report card recently came back, and it's not good news. High school reading scores have sunk to their lowest point in more than 30 years. Results from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is considered the nation's most reliable benchmark test, show that about a third of last year's seniors scored below basic reading proficiency. About 35% of students scored just proficient marks in reading. So what's behind the big drop? Experts say more students are regularly missing class since the pandemic, and this has led up to interrupted learning. Last year, a survey led by the National Assessment of Educational Progress showed that almost a quarter of fourth graders missed five or more days of school in the previous month. That's double the rate reported in 2019. On top of all this, more young people are spending several hours in front of screens. This leaves less time to read and makes it harder to sit down and focus for a long stretch of time. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, teens now spend an average of 7.5 hours a day on screens for entertainment, while kids age 8 to 12 log nearly 5 hours daily, not counting schoolwork. On the upside, some states are taking a proactive approach to teaching reading in order to turn things around. Research shows that teaching letters and sounds and precise logical sequences at an early age, like kindergarten and first grade, can help boost spelling, fluency, and understanding. For example, in Mississippi, schools are doing exactly this while also investing in extra teacher training and early intervention help for kids who seem to be struggling. The state, which used to rank near the bottom in reading scores, has now climbed to the top of early reading performance. At the end of the day, falling behind in reading limits a student's academic path and their success after high school. It also closes the door on an entirely different creative experience. Reading is an active way to step into other people's perspectives and lifetimes. It helps us learn new things and stay curious about the world. Without it, these things vanish and we're reliant on the passive role of watching screen after screen. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Fresh off her success with 2024's Short and Sweet, Sabrina Carpenter is right back at it in 2025 with her latest album, Man's Best Friend. Carpenter has taken some heat, online and in the press, for releasing two albums so close together, with some questioning how much artistic growth is really evident from last year to this year. The argument is that she's simply releasing more of the same to capitalize on a moment of celebrity. But that's not how I see it at all. Where Short and Sweet included four songs with writing and/or production credits from Jack Antonoff, Man's Best Friend has nine such tracks. The work that Carpenter and Antonoff started in last year's Please, Please, Please is further built upon with the poppier Manchild, the Dolly Parton reminiscent ballad We Almost Broke Up Again Last Night, and the triumphantly rock-infused Goodbye. It feels like two artists who struck gold last year and wanted to continue working together to further explore their shared musical references and passions. I hear artistic growth all over Man's Best Friend, which serves as a powerful showcase of Carpenter's ability to pull from musical heroes across decades of pop music and tie them all together with her trademark lyrics full of clever turns of phrase and tongue-in-cheek double entendres. The album is a little bit ABBA, a little bit Christina Aguilera, and a little bit Donna Summer, reminiscent of Earth, Wind & Fire and also Ariana Grande. Soaked in Antonoff-led production that brings in elements of his band Bleachers and his musical heroes like Bruce Springsteen and the Beatles. Man's Best Friend is familiar and novel at the same time, and it absolutely demands to be danced to and sung along with. It's a supernova pop album in a year that was desperate for an injection of fun. I'm Evan Rook.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Are you passionate about local high school sports? So are we. WXCO 98.9 FM is proud to be the only station in Wausau bringing you live, play-by-play coverage of high school sports, game after game, season after season. But we can't do it alone. We are currently seeking local sponsors and community partners who believe in the power of sports to bring people together, inspire youth, and energize our hometown pride. Promote your business, support our local athletes, be heard by thousands of loyal local listeners. If your business is interested in supporting live sports broadcasts while gaining valuable exposure, now is the perfect time to become a WXCO sports sponsor. Message us on our Facebook page or call or text our sales rep, Aaliyah, at 608-573-1597. That's 608-573-1597. 1597. Let's keep Wausau High School sports on the air together.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the WIAA, are the 178,000 high school sports students in Wisconsin. And so we stand. We stand for the runners, soccer, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, administrators, and officials. We stand for the swimmers, football players, and wrestlers. We stand for the golfers, softball, and volleyball players. We stand as the national leader and advocate for high school athletics and all who participate in them and make them possible. Because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Ahead of Wednesday's government shutdown deadline, President Trump meets congressional leaders tomorrow, hoping to end the impasse over a short-term spending bill. Here's CBS's Michael Toscano.
Democrats have pushed for the bill to include a permanent extension of tax credits for people enrolled in health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, as well as a rolling back of Medicaid cuts that were in the recently passed domestic policy bill passed by Republicans they call the Big Beautiful
Trump's
Bill.
Trump's also meeting Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tomorrow to discuss the president's Gaza peace plan.
Hamas would not be part of any post-war government, and some Hamas leaders would be allowed to leave Gaza.
But CBS's Linda Gradstein says hardliners will likely pressure Netanyahu to reject the plan. The world's Mormons are today mourning this man.
We teach that God's love for his children is infinite, regardless of race, nationality, or gender.
Russell M. Nelson, the oldest ever president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, died last night at 101. CBS News Brief, I'm Vicki Barker.